Sessmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. If it's Tuesday, that means that Peter King is with us. Every week, the Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, Peter King. Peter is releasing a story tomorrow on his website, the MMQB. He was actually granted access to being with the Arizona Cardinals, with Bruce Arians, with Carson Palmer, and coaches for a couple of days during the week the Cardinals played at Cleveland, and was given access to the game planning and that sort of thing. And has written a story about it. It's a two-parter that comes out tomorrow. So I want to talk to Peter about that story. It's my understanding there's 171 plays. There were 171 plays in the game plan, and I'm wondering if he had access to one play, 10 plays. I don't know. And what is it that he's working on? So much around the Cardinals. Also, what is his view of Carson Palmer this coming Sunday playing the Cincinnati Bengals, Palmer's former team? Is it really that big of a deal? I know that we in our industry will blow it up, and in our side of the street will blow it up. I shouldn't speak for us, at least. We're not going to blow it up, but we'll do things that we see of interest. And obviously, that's one of them, but the soundbite will be it's just another game. It's not that big of a deal. It's one at a time. We have a three-game lead in the division, and so on and so forth. That's what I'm expecting tomorrow when it's that time to hear all that. I did watch the Bengals last night. And we'll get into that here in a minute. So Peter will be with us at 10:20. Because it is Arizona State and U of A playing this week, Jeff Van Rapphorst, the color analyst for ASU, will jump on board. So we'll talk with Rapper. That'll come up at 10:30, both via Skype. So you can watch them as well as listen to them in this day and age of multiple platforms. That's what it is all about. So look forward to having Rapper on board. Television show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona at 6, at 10, 1 a.m. and 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. That's on Fox Sports AZ. We do it Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, brought to you by your Arizona Ford dealers. We appreciate that. Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ. All right, all that out of the way. The game last night, so I was watching it for the Bengals preparation. And then the game ended, and A.J. Green ends up with the fumble, and the Bengals end up losing. We're down to just two undefeated teams, I should say, the Patriots and Carolina. Those are the two teams that are left standing that are the undefeated. And then J.J. Watt comes out and gets the post-game interview, and he takes some shots and says some things about Andy Dalton, Red Ryder, BB gun. And so today there's all this conversation about Andy Dalton and J.J. Watt and what is their problem and why is J.J. Watt taking shots. And I've been over J.J. Watt for a while now. Like Hard Knocks in August should have just been called J.J. Watt's infomercial. Sometimes guys get completely overexposed, and I get it. It's the Texans. There's not much there. They don't have a marquee quarterback at all. So you want to grab on to people and give them as much of one person as possible. The problem with that is after a while, you're just kind of rolling your eyes. And so this guy who's doing the commercials and is loved and liked by so many people and his Q score and all that, after a game to take shots at Andy Dalton, I'm like, okay, is this true colors here? Like, really, you need to refer to the quarterback as Red Ryder BB gun? Sure, it gives us something to talk about today in what was otherwise a drab, dreary game last night. I don't know. I know you're building your brand. I know you've got a big audience. I know that you know the moment. I know you're auditioning for when your NFL career is over. You know that there's guys in that truck that are just drooling because he'll do great. He'll do great on television. There's guys that just are lining up their post-career when they have the moment. And so take the shot at the moment. I think it was when Lisa Salters asked him about, you were hurt late in the game. And he said, yeah, I got hit in a place that I can't talk about here on national television. Versus, yeah, it's nothing big, no big deal. Okay, so he knows the moment. And he knows that we're going to grab onto all that stuff and dissect and analyze. And so he's playing the system. It's fine. It's fine. Let's move on. But the Bengals losing. So let's talk about that a little bit. I didn't think Andy Dalton was very good at all. And there's this whole narrative about, yeah, the Bengals are a great regular season team this year. And A.J. Green is a terrific wide receiver. And he is. But they're just a team that is going to be set up to fail when it comes to the postseason. If I'm the Cardinals and I'm watching that game last night, I don't know. There's some of the Bengals of undisciplined. They couldn't find A.J. Green. I think the Cardinals' secondary is much better than what they faced, the Bengals faced last night with the Texans. So this coming week, there'll be all this conversation about getting A.J. Green more involved in the offense. I already heard that was happening this morning in Cincinnati, that their Bengal fans were upset about that. It's a game the Cardinals should win, right? I mean, they really should. If you look at the Bengals and Cardinals right now, I do think that the two teams are very similar this season. Very similar. They're kind of under the radar. America has not embraced the Bengals. America hasn't really embraced the Cardinals. It's the Cardinals now getting on a national stage last Sunday night. You can't tell me the Ravens game was there was a national, wow, we really got to get behind the Cardinals. I think clearly the Carson Palmer push for MVP has grabbed hold. The Cardinals have done a very good job of that, and they should. And Bruce is loved by media, so nationally he's showing up in places and being quoted in places that are just outside of Arizona, which is terrific for the organization. Look, I'm not sitting here questioning anything going on with the Cardinals. It's just I look at Cincinnati this week, and I said it yesterday. The Cardinals are no longer pretenders. Winning as they did at Seattle, you're either, as Bruce Arians suggested to them, are you guys pretenders or contenders at halftime of the Cleveland game? And what happened at Seattle, to me, I'm not going to go down the road of, well, this team just is a bunch of phonies. No, they've turned the corner, and they are contenders. Now, what's going to happen over the remaining seven games of the season? What is it that they're needing to work on to get better and better and better? Last week was more of an off-the-field thing for me than anything else. You're never going to face that much adversity. You kidding me? Two defensive strip scores, two defensive big plays, and your team finds a way to rally on the road at Seattle. They didn't rally on the road at Jacksonville. You know, some place where the crowd's not a factor. They did it at Seattle, and they punched him right in the gut. So it was more about off the field with this team last week to me. So, yeah, they're more talented on the field. This week they should win. It's a home field advantage now in Arizona. It is a home field advantage. And I think the national attention, even right down to the number of views and clicks and people picking up on Drew Stanton acting like a cheerleader on the sideline, which I thought was terrific. We need more of that in sports. There are quarterback changes all over the place in the NFL today. Brock Osweiler, the former Sun Devil. When Brock left ASU, and you ASU fans can either agree or disagree with me, it was the lowest of the lowest for Arizona State football. It truly was. The Sun Devils were at the Vegas Bowl of all places. Dennis had been fired. He had all the stuff going on with Vontez. Lisa Love was just lost. I mean, just not then, the whole time. But Lisa Love was just lost as the athletic director. They thought they had a coach hired in June Jones, and they didn't have a coach hired. And so Brock Osweiler is kind of standing around looking at all this saying, you got to be kidding me. You guys are dysfunctional. You do not have it figured out. He did not believe in Todd Graham. So he leaves Arizona State, and he goes and puts his name in the NFL draft. He has sat there in Denver and quietly gone through it, at times a bit frustrated. Remember last year he was running out on the field in a game and he thought that it was his turn and he got called back and Peyton ran on the field. Now it's his time. So Brock's going to play this week. Brock's going to start this week, and this may be here's the future, or this just may be nothing more than Brock Osweiler showing that he can't play in Denver. I don't know. I hope he does well. I don't have any ill will towards Brock Osweiler. I have no reason to doubt that he can't play, but there's a few things in that one. You tell me, if you're a Bronco fan, have you guys been able to run the football this year? The answer to that is unequivocally no. So then the pressure steps up on the wide receivers. Have they been consistent? The answer again is no. Is part of that because they've had an injured quarterback? Probably. So that's of interest to me, Brock Osweiler getting the start. I think it's significant in St. Louis that they're benching Nick Foles. I really believe that. Look, the Rams are really good, I think, defensively. Last week, they struggled all over the place in every way, shape, and form against the Bears. The Bears are getting better. I think the Bears are going to be one of those teams that the Cardinals are going to look back and say, man, are we lucky we got them the second week of the season because they were awful. They're getting better and better. The Rams within the division already beat the Cardinals once here. Cardinals have to go back there. Rams change quarterbacks. It's Jeff Fisher in the middle of the season saying, look, if we could get a drop out of Case Keenum offensively, So that bears watching because, of course, it's in the NFC West. Just because the Cardinals have a three-game lead, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's over. It should be over, but you don't know that. I don't know that. Peter King here in a couple of minutes. Suns played last night. There was no Kobe Bryant, and they did what they were supposed to do against a bad team. This backcourt of the Suns, though, Brandon Knight had 30 and 15. Bledsoe had 21 and 28 minutes. My guy Keefe didn't play last night, and the Suns won easily, 120 to 101. Seven Suns in double figures. For whatever reason, I'm waiting for a win that I can say, well, they had their full complement of players, they had everybody in place, and the Suns went out and won a very competitive game against a really good team. Haven't been able to say that because, again, last night, Kobe didn't play. And it doesn't matter to me that Kobe's at 37, he's breaking down. Kobe didn't even show up. So no Kobe, no full-strength Lakers once again. Tomorrow night, the Bulls are in town. I was excited to see the Bulls at full strength. Derrick Rose injured last night, sprained ankle. Don't know if he's going to play or not. Haven't seen anything today as of yet. Probably not going to happen with him. I want to see a team at full strength. It's the only time this year the Bulls roll into Phoenix. They play late tomorrow night at 8:30. So that caught my eye. Coyotes got whacked last night by the Islanders. And Chris Bryant was a National League Rookie of the Year. They've got more awards today that we will we'll go through. Some of what is on my mind in the world of sports. Peter King is next. The Monday Morning Quarterback, SI.com, the MMQB. He joins me via Skype from his apartment in New York City on his story that he's writing around the Cardinals and their offense. Really complex story. And also Carson Palmer's time as a Cincinnati Bengals. Is it really that big of a story with him playing the Bengals this week? That's next. Then Jeff Van Raphorst. I'm Brad Sussmat. Peter King joins us now, the MMQB. And I'm not on Peter's payroll, but I've got a teaser for you. And actually, Peter joins us now via Skype from New York City. Peter was given access to Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians on the game planning process. Now, it was the week of the Cleveland game. I'm not going to pull any, you know, cut hairs here, but it was the Cleveland game. They took care of business. But this story on the MMQB is going to be published tomorrow. And I don't know any more than that. And Peter didn't even prompt me on it. I just saw it. I read his column. So obviously very interesting content. Tell me about this story first and foremost you've been working on.
Well, Brad, I appreciate that. Tomorrow, about this time, we'll post a story. Basically, it's going to be a two-part story on how a quarterback absorbs, learns, and then puts a game plan into action in a game. And I really appreciate the help on this story of Carson Palmer, obviously, and of Bruce Arians. Look, I'm not totally behind the curtain. I was with Carson when he got the game plan on a Tuesday evening before that game. And I was with Bruce Arians and a couple of his assistants that day and then followed it through the week. But, you know, the thing that is so interesting about it is that this game plan was 171 plays long, about 20 plays longer than a usual one. But it's 171 plays long. And I ended up writing about one specific play. It's a play called Pistol Strong Right Stack Act 6 Y Cross Divide. So I kind of dissected how that play should work, why Arians loved it, why Palmer really liked it, and what happened to it in the course of this game when it was called. But I started out, Brad, thinking, okay, I have to make a story on a game plan interesting and valid and make sure that it doesn't just football nerd people out. Because really, you've been inside football complexes. They speak a foreign language.
Yep.
And so you, if you just overwhelm people with the foreign language, much of which is foreign to me also, then it's going to be people are just going to glaze over and they'll move on to the next thing. So I tried to take this one play and to describe it and to get people to understand, hey, multiply this times 171, and this is what Carson Palmer had to do in the course of this week. And on a short week, not only did they play on Monday against Baltimore, so it's a short week, but they fly on Friday that week because anytime they go to the East, they're going to fly a day early.
Right.
So it's a very compact week. And it's just very entertaining. Look, I know people who really like football will find a lot of interesting stuff in this story. But to me, these are the stories kind of I live to do. I really enjoy finding out a lot of things that I don't know. And speaking of that, Brad, just give you one little teaser of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so when Bruce Arians calls the play into Carson Palmer's helmet during a game, he doesn't say pistol strong right, stack X six, Y cross divide. He says number 64.
Yeah.
So then Carson Palmer looks on his wristband that he has, you know, out there. Everybody always says, geez, veteran quarterback, 35 years old. Why does he need a wristband? Well, because there's a limited amount of time that a coach and a coach has to communicate to a quarterback. Arian says, I'm just going to give him a number and he can look it up and he can call it off his wrist. And that's one of the kind of, I didn't know that. And it's one of the kind of interesting things that I found out preparing for this story.
Okay, did they run the play, Peter?
They did run the play.
How many times?
They just ran it once.
They
run almost all plays only once. They run it, you know, they might run running plays more than once. But what's so interesting, I don't want to tell you whether the play worked or not, but what's so interesting about the play is that, you know, you spend all of this time, all of this money. You know, the Cardinals now, they're one of the first teams in the NFL to do the virtual reality thing during practice, you know, where they put a camera out. It, you know, I see this at some teams when I go visit them and also during training camp. But, and this is the first year it's happened, by the way. They put a camera right next to the quarterback during practice, and it's a 360-degree camera. So what they try to do is they try to tape a play at practice, and then Carson Palmer will go in after practice. He'll look at some plays during practice. How did this one look? What did the defense do? Because they're trying to get the defense, the scout team defense, to simulate what Cleveland is going to do during the game. So anyway, it's just, it's all spy versus spy. And then, you know what sometimes you miss is that sometimes there are other factors involved. There's wind. There's rain. Maybe the team gets a couple of injuries and you have no idea what's going to happen during the course of the game. So those are the kind of little things that buffet a team as they try to make a game plan work on Sunday.
Okay, no, I mean this as a compliment. You're geeking out on this. It's almost like it's a game that just came out of Call of Duty or so into this story, which is great. I mean, that's what you live. That's what we live for in this business, right? It's not punt, pass, and kick. There's more to it.
If you know, look, I 2 years ago at the MMQB, I did a story on a week in the life of an officiating crew. Followed the officiating crew from Monday to Sunday. Went all around the country to interview guys, to hang with guys. And that was some of the most fun I've ever had in this business.
Yeah.
This story was an incredible amount of fun, too, because I think I like to pull back the curtain within reason.
Sure.
Okay, I like to pull back the curtain and basically try to tell people things about football that they don't know.
Okay, help me out here with Bruce. And this is in the MMQB. It comes out tomorrow. Peter King with us. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. It's great to have Peter on board from the MMQB. Carson Palmer and Cincinnati, you wrote earlier this week that there's really not a story here in terms of going back with revenge and hatred and all that stuff that we usually see. Expound on that a little bit, because that will be played up here quite a bit. Palmer against his former team. I think it's
Brad,
far beyond.
I don't think, I think I wrote this morning in my Fine 15 column, you know, ranking the teams. But here's the thing. I think that there must be this impression out there that because Carson Palmer isn't a Bengal anymore, he must hate Cincinnati, hate the Bengals. He's got a home in Ohio that he still uses, and he goes outside of Cincinnati that he goes uses for hunting. He's got a lot of very good life friends in Cincinnati. He still gets his coffee delivered from a coffee shop. You know, the beans that are roasted in Cincinnati. So I think the only thing that he feels that he doesn't like is this impression that, A, he hates the Bengals. He's not grateful to the Bengals. He's not anything. Because, look, I'm sure deep down inside he says, well, geez, we went 4-12 my last year. Mike Brown didn't give us enough weapons to win. I got that. But overall, I can just tell you, he's not a bitter person. He just isn't. He's not a bitter person about what happened, nor should he be. He basically was the franchise quarterback in Cincinnati, and they traded him to Oakland at his request, basically.
Before I let you go, last question here. So you saw Sunday night what the Cardinals did at Seattle. Peter, some guys are made to be offensive coordinators and not head coaches. I think Norv Turner falls into that ilk, and he's a terrific play caller. Bruce's play call to Andre Ellington, it's the second time this year he's just pulled one out of the bag. He is as good a play caller and head coach combined as one as I've seen in quite some time. You've been around him quite a bit on this story, obviously. From afar, it seems like you admire him. What do you make out of Arians and the job he's doing this year?
Well, I think one of the things that I learned in Cleveland that day after the game, I walked up to Palmer at his locker, and he's just shaking his head, and he goes, Bruce Arians had an unbelievable day today. He said everything he called, and he did say it to the media in his press conference too. He said everything he called, it's like he was feeling exactly what I was feeling out there and knowing exactly what I thought was going to work at the time that we called it. And remember, that game was, I think the final was 34-20, but the Cardinals turned it over a bunch, and it could have been 50-10 if they didn't turn it over. But anyway, the point was that all a quarterback wants is a coach who he's going to have this simpatico with, who he's going to be one-on-one with, who he really – they're going to have a like-minded approach to the game. And, you know, I look at Palmer, and, you know, in his career, you know, this Sunday, basically he's playing to get to 500 for his career, including playoff games. And I'm saying to myself, what would have happened to Carson Palmer if he had Bruce Arians his whole career? Now, who knows? That you know, they're helped also in terms of winning by how good their defense plays, you know, many Sundays.
Yep.
So it isn't only this part of the game, but I think that it's rare that you get a quarterback who, you know, as Carson Palmer tells me in his story, I love throwing goes. And what coach in the NFL likes calling goes more than Bruce Arians? Right. Nobody. Right. Everybody is in this dink and dunk West Coast style. Bruce Arians says, give me the big armed guy. Give me the speed demons. I'll take my chance on being the Raiders of the 70s, you know, and I just think it's a really good match.
Stay well. Appreciate the time. Look forward to the read on the MMQB tomorrow. Peter King, thanks.
Thank you, Brad.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the Territorial Cup game on Saturday. And those of you that have been watching the show, listening to me, you know, I'm bitterly, bitterly disappointed. I am not one of those that believes that it's a successful season if you just beat your rival. Now, that said, I'm bringing on somebody who's much smarter than me when it comes to this, and that is the quarterback Jeff Van Raphorst, because, of course, he does the color work with Tim Healy on the ASU games. And he may see it differently than me, that 2015 would be a success if they beat the U of A on Saturday. How are you?
I'm doing good, Brad. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine. Where do you come down on this one, Jeff?
Well, I think, you know, I think you want everything. I think we're a culture in America that's greedy, and certainly if you're a Sun Devil fan, you're greedy with high expectations. You want to be playing for the Pac-12 Conference Championship, and you want to be in the top four, and definitely you want to beat your rival, U of A. So, you know, I want it all.
This this season, how would you sum it up?
Very much, it was a roller coaster. You know, it was very you know, highs and lows, very frustrating to a lot of people. I think the expectations were very, very high. And on paper, the team looked real solid. And it's just sometimes it's a couple plays here and there, a call. I remember before the UCLA game we were broadcasting, and I was talking to Tim Healy, and I said, you know, of all the things that we need, and I was talking with Dr. McCoy and Dr. Chabra, and, you know, I said, we need confidence. If you could ever figure out how to bottle an ounce of confidence, and, you know, you wouldn't need all these other drugs that people are taking, because I really think that the difference between year to year sometimes is just confidence, just making a play or having the belief that somebody can make the play and have that go-to guy that can get it done. And, you know, certainly they've been close, but haven't been able to get across the finish line.
I think the part, Jeff, for me is they've played maybe 7 or 8 complete quarters. I'm not even talking about games. I'm just talking about quarters this season. The UCLA game was as complete an effort. That the second half last week against Washington was pretty darn good after just a miserable first half. But it's just been about quarters this year in stacking positives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could take the Washington State game, the first half, or, you know, first quarter they played lights out, and you're thinking, yep, okay, we're going to run away with this. And I, you know, I said on the air a couple of times that sometimes I think this team doesn't like posterity, you know, prosperity. And when things are going well, embrace it and, you know, put the hammer down. There's an old analogy, you know, when people ride bikes, the guys that win the races are the ones that pedal when it's downhill. When things are easy, pedal hard anyway. Just keep grinding every play. And certainly the Sun Devils have shown that kind of, you know, chaotic behavior.
Okay, what's been the positives for you this season? I mean, you have a player that you look at. I look at Kalen Ballage, by example, and say, okay, he's blossomed. I actually see this kid playing beyond his time at Arizona State. But in the here and now, he's been terrific.
Yeah, and Kalen's been phenomenal. I think Demario Richards has been great. You know, he doesn't get enough credit. He's a great inside runner. That 1-2 punch is real solid. You know, I like what the interior three offensive linemen have done. The center two guards have played well. You know, the tackles have struggled this year. On the defensive line, I think Christian Sam has played very, very well. But Antonio Longino is, especially after last week, has just been a guy who really shows his value to the program, because, you know, Ishmael Murphy Richardson is going to be great, but he's a redshirt freshman. He's got speed. He's got length. He has size, but he doesn't have that explosive power yet that he's going to get with another year or two in the weight room. And Longino gives you that. But it's not just one guy. You know, if you had to kind of look around and really kind of wonder who's going to be your, you know, your MVPs. I mean, it's going to be Simone. It's going to be Fiso. Maybe Longino and Sam. Clearly, all those guys are on the defensive side of the ball. And on the offensive side, you know, it's kind of been a committee. They haven't really had that go-to guy that they can, you know, rely on, but certainly in the passing game.
In the last 2 weeks, do you use a little bit more of Manny Wilkins, just a little bit more, so that he's got things to work with? I know they're hoping for a bowl berth, but last week when they put him in the second quarter, I've been lobbying, saying it's nothing against Mike Bercovici, and I'm not saying to bench Mike. Just saying, cut him back if it's 80% Berko and 20% Manny. I know you're trying to win games, but you got to start getting the quarterback for next year because Berko's not going to be here.
Yeah, and I think they've been trying to. I know that's been in the game plan. The last couple of weeks, they've had a package for Manny and just haven't been able to get to it. You know, you look at the Wazoo game, we're up, you know, 14-0. We don't kick the field goal, go up 17, and then they come back. Yeah, and so at that point, you want to put Manny in where he can have success, where it's early in the game, where he's not going to be shell-shocked, you know. And I liked what they did. They got him in on first down, second down, but they got the penalty on 3rd and 18, I think it was. They put Berko back in. So, you know, let Manny go in where he can have success. I'm a big believer in that going into next year. Like you said, mentally, at least he's taken some snaps in the game. He's been the guy. You know, my redshirt freshman year, I didn't get very many snaps. And going into my redshirt sophomore year, all of a sudden now, you know, you're anointed the starter. You earn it and you get your spot, but you're unproven. And that's a big deal.
Before I let you go, I know you've been following ASU closely. Have you seen enough of U of A? Do you have something as the analyst against U of A that you'd like to talk about, or the player when you're at ASU towards U of A? Is this a tough week for you?
No, I mean, as a player, as an analyst, I really don't like U of A either way. So, it's pretty simple. And some of that's bitterness. I mean, I never beat the U of A. I was 0-5 against them. So I was part of that streak that was very on the negative side. And yet, you know, back to your initial question, we won the Pac-10 championships and won the Rose Bowl. So, you know, I always believe you set your sights high. And you know, if you're a Sun Devil fan, you want to beat the U of A. But to some regards, you know, they're a little bit, you know, it's not the major focus, where I think a lot of times at U of A it is the major focus. But then again, they have been to a Rose Bowl or won a Pac-10 championship.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate the time as always.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks again to Jeff Van Rapphorst. So tomorrow, Eric and I are talking about this. We're going to do Brian Jeffries tomorrow to give the U of A side of the street. I wanted to have the play-by-player color guys on. And then Tim Brando is going to be with us tomorrow, one of the deans of college football broadcasting. He is doing the play-by-play of the ASU-U of A game on Saturday. Obviously, here in town and actually across the state, the U of A ASU game doesn't have near the sizzle that it's had the last few years. And that's for many, many reasons. It's right down the line of it's been a disappointing year in both Tucson and in Phoenix. Rich Rod, imminent departure, in my opinion. The Cardinals having great success, the eyeballs not being on them. This game's not even sold out, okay? So I know that there's a school of thought that this is one of the best rivalries in the country coming up this Saturday, but, you know, just look around town. And it's so deflating. Even around the state, I've noticed it from fans that when we'll put something out or write something or talk about what's going on with ASU and U of A, it comes back to just bad year for the Sun Devils. I do think the two interesting storylines here, and Jeff and I just talked about one of them, is whether or not Todd Graham should be playing Manny Wilkins more. And look, I'm not going to put Jeff in that spot, but reading between the lines, he's in agreement with me. Get him out there and give him some snaps, give him some reps. But if you lose the game to the U of A, there is still, I think it's a bigger game for Todd Graham because there still is that group that's out there that only believes that if you beat your rival to the South, that it's a successful season. And I don't get that sense from U of A fan up here towards ASU because they don't care about football still. Last year was like a growing curve for what's going on in Tucson. Even this year in recruiting for U of A in state, I don't think it's going very well. I don't think it's anybody's fault. But from what I'm hearing, all the uncertainty over Rich Rodriguez's departure is really hurting what's going on for the Wildcats this year. So Saturday will be played in front of a stadium that's not sold out. Neither team is going to any bowl game of consequence. I am not one of those that believes that if you go to a bowl game, it's a successful season because there's so many bowl games this year. There's even a narrative running around out there, guys, that there may not be enough six-win teams this year to fill all the bowl games. And so for ASU, it's a bigger game for ASU, obviously, to become bowl eligible. U of A is already bowl eligible. ASU still has one more game against Cal. If you win out, you will have won three straight to finish the regular season. I guess that's something to build upon, even though you were billed as a top four team. The recruiting stuff, we do a lot of that. It's starting to pick up a little bit of steam around Arizona State. I don't see it as much for U of A. So there's some stuff that's on the line this week, but I'm seeing some stuff on social media and I hear around town or actually from my friends in Tucson as well. They've got their bets, you know, the ASU guys betting the U of A guy, and that's all well and good, but it's not nearly as passionate and nearly as ferocious as it was the last 3 years. And it may be that on game day, but really everything's pointing towards what's going on with the Cardinals. And if they can, in fact, take down Cincinnati this week and go about it in a way where they're starting to cross over from just the diehard Cardinal fan and grabbing onto some of those NFL fans that are following other teams, believe it or not. I'm starting to see that. I'm a fill-in-the-blank fan, but I'm living here, and I'm really happy what the Cardinals are doing. The rating on Sunday night was a good number. I do judge that not all the way through and through as a measure of success. I think if you put an NFL game, people are going to watch, like bowl games. So, you know, this week as it leads up to ASU and U of A, just know that because I've got some people sending me notes, why aren't you doing more on the game? I'm doing pretty much what we've always done, but, you know, having Todd and Rich Rod this week, to me, it's – what are they going to say after this year? There's not much to say. I'd rather look at them in the eye when they're both all said and done, say, all right, let's go back through this and let's peel back the onion and let's not sit here and just try to grasp onto some things that were really good, because when you have years like this, you should not do that. And I'm not saying that Todd and Rich will, but this week they certainly would. So, you know, that's my thing on the games this week. In terms of the bowls, so the bowl game stuff is still really interesting to me where, in fact, you could see Arizona State and Arizona end up, assuming ASU wins out. There are a couple of scenarios and some guys that follow bowl projections very closely. They're much smarter than I'll ever be, and that doesn't take much, by the way. But they're much smarter than I'll ever be, and they will go right down the line and talk with people and say, okay, this team could go here, this team could go there. the scenario of Arizona State having to go to Tucson, to play their bowl game this year, to me is something that I would never have imagined at the start of the year. Could you imagine Ray Anderson, Todd Graham, encouraging Sun Devil fans to go to Tucson to play in a bowl game? Could you imagine the city of Tucson and the people that put on the bowl game being excited to have people from Phoenix come on down? I would think it'd be more those people excited, trying to get hotel rooms filled and golf courses filled, and having Arizona State play a team like Nevada or somebody like that. That is a real scenario. If ASU wins this week, I'm not going to go through all the, if this team wins, if this team loses, if this team wins, but there is a very strong scenario of Arizona State, if they're bowl eligible, going to a few different places. The Las Vegas Bowl is one. I think privately ASU would like to go to the Las Vegas Bowl, from my understanding. They would get their bowl game out of the way. That's the only way to put it. It's a close trip. It's an easy trip. It's simple, and it's in a good time slot for television. Arizona State playing in Memphis on January 2nd, playing a team like Mississippi State. Okay, really good exposure slot. You're spending New Year's in Memphis. There's worse places. Beale Street's all right by me. Go to Mrs. White's, have a good time. But if that is where they go, do they recruit that area of the country? Is it a better experience for their kids? Yeah, it's probably a better experience. But does it really do that much for the team? Getting those extra practices is what coaches will talk about and people around the teams. We get all these extra practices, so this is great. I don't know if that's a benefit going to Memphis or not. Going back to San Diego, please don't do it. Going back to El Paso, please don't do it. There's no reason to go to those games. Playing the bowl game over at Chase Field, that's the Cactus Bowl. Playing that game up here, I don't see the benefit of that, other than it's a game here and you get your extra practices. On the U of A side, they could end up in some of those same locations that I talked about. So the winner of this game this week, you know, if U of A wins it, they move up into a better bowl game. ASU wins it, they just get bowl eligible, and I think they get to the bottom of the barrel. If it's San Francisco, if it's Vegas. So that's what's going on this week's game. So you can check out all of our content over there on the website at sports360az.com. Sports360az.com. Our television show is tonight. TV show tonight at 6, at 10, at 1, and at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ, brought to you by the Arizona Ford dealers. And we do high school, we do college, we do pro, all things around the football and around the state, football-wise with the football playoffs, ASU, U of A, and again on the pro side of things with Peter King. Thanks for being with us.